We've been having a series of conversations this month here on the show about what it's like to live and work in our communities if you're Black. Last week, we spoke with three Black professionals about their experiences in the private sector. Earlier this week, we revisited a conversation about Black fatherhood. Today, we are joined by three professionals whose work is focused on public service. Here with us is Monique Symes, who teaches 6th and 7th grade English at the John W. McCormick Middle School in Dorchester. Also, Andrea Perry, the Executive Director of Youth Connect, which is a program of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston in partnership with the Boston Police Department. And Jerry Cohen, a second-generation driver with the MBTA, a member of the Carmen's Union, and a lifelong Boston resident. Monique, Andrea, Jerry, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Monique, I'll start with you, and I appreciate all three of you joining us to talk about your experiences. Monique, feel free to interpret this however you like. What does it mean to you to be Black in Boston?
Starting off with an easy question, I see. I think when I think about this question, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak today very much, so thank you for having me. When I think about this question, I think about it in a couple different ways. I think whenever it comes to anything that has to do with identity, it does, to me, include transition and change. And so I cannot answer this question without reflecting and sharing a little bit about my past. Growing up in Boston, being a family of immigrants from Jamaica, attending primarily white schools, and not really having lots of ideas of what it meant to be a person of color in the city until I went out of the city a little bit of ways to the Berkshires to attend college and then came back. And now as a public school teacher, I have a different perspective as well. And so in short, I would answer, you know, being Black in Boston to me means activism. It means using my voice to share about things that are happening, things that I see, and also helping the young people that I work with every single day to try to make sense of what's happening around them, because that's my best way of teaching. I think of teaching in terms of coaching, right? I learn as much from my young people as they do from me, and teaching and learning is really an exchange. And so my identity has really transitioned throughout my life. And although I've primarily only lived in Boston, I can say that, you know, I feel a lot more secure in my identity as a Black woman in the city that I grew up in and lived in. And I hope that I can encourage my young people to kind of feel that same pride and confidence as they continue to grow up.
Andrea, does that resonate with you? Does that characterize the way you'd answer the question? What else would you say?
I would echo a lot of what Monique shared, but I also, especially in terms of transitions, I think about it in terms of I'm not born and raised in the city. I came to the city in the mid-90s, and I've been here ever since. But when I came in my 20s, I was in a much different place in my life than I am right now. And so I think about those transitions from being an early professional to now being a parent, and thinking about what it means to be a Black female leader in the nonprofit sector. What does it mean to the young people we work with at Youth Connect? What does it mean to now raise a child here in the city who was born and raised? And what does that mean for her to be a young Black girl? And what do I want for her now and in the future is kind of how I think about it.
Jerry, what about you?
I agree with a lot of that. Also, like growing up, I played basketball, traveling around these states, and a lot of people didn't think there were Black people in Boston. So like going around and telling them from Boston, it kind of like, they were kind of shocked, like, oh, there's Black people there. So it kind of gave me a sense of pride being Black from Boston.
So the three of you all went into professions that are of service to others. Did any of you experience surprises or barriers as a teacher, a social worker, a tea driver, as you tried to enter your professions?
Well, I can start. My experience in graduate school was definitely, you know, was predominantly white female, and that was even when I think about
this is social work school.
In social work school, yeah. And even when I think about it now, it is predominantly white female. And so I think the schools in the area have done a better job of trying to have more people of color, have more people who identify as male in the classroom, but it's still predominantly white female. And so I was very fortunate in that my advisor at school was a Black person, and then my field supervisors were Black people, and my first supervisor when I got a job, a real job, was a person of color as well. And so that was something that was important for me, to seek out those mentors and to seek out those professionals who understood what it was like to kind of navigate the space professionally. And so I felt really fortunate. And so I know I try to think about that for my staff right now at Youth Connect. And then also any chance I can talk to a person of color, a Black woman, a Black male, about going into social work or any kind of helping profession, and kind of even how to navigate grad school. It's something I had to figure out on my own. I want them to know about scholarships and opportunities and the different types of support you can get on the campus to kind of navigate and be successful in that journey.
Monique, was mentoring, the kind of mentoring and role modeling that Andrea just talked about, available to you? And if so, was it important to you as you sought to become a teacher and entered your profession?
Absolutely. As soon as Andrea spoke, I was like, that was exactly, you know, a huge part of the beginning. Unlike many young people, I always wanted to be a teacher. I was 11, I wanted to teach. I was 12, I wanted to teach. I coming from a family of you know, amazing women who were just all about service. My mom was a nurse, grandmother nurse, auntie, you know, all the people in my life did things all the time for other people in service of others. And, you know, I saw that firsthand every day. And so I always knew I wanted to work with young people. And seeing, you know, the role modeling just in my family was by far the biggest and most powerful impact on my trajectory and my professional life. And then, you know, definitely echoing Andrea in the beginning, I had and was very fortunate enough to have, you know, female Black role models from a very young age. I went to, you know, the Mattapan elementary school, the Mattahunt, where I can distinctly remember meeting the first woman of color and my first male teacher of color, Mr. Mack, who is now our political director at the Boston Teachers Union, and being like, oh my God, like, this is great, because I had my introduction to schooling in the United States was at a primarily white school. I was in Metco. I was bused out to Lexington, and I felt very odd, you know, to put it very simply. And so having the representation is really, really amazing. We, you know, as a Boston Public Schools, and in conjunction with our BTU, we hosted a series of events for the first week of February to kick off and participate in the Black Lives Matter at Schools Week. And our young people, you know, from 3 to 4 different schools around the city of Boston really echoed that having someone in the classroom that not only looks like them, but can share and talk about the challenges that they too have gone through, and to help navigate, you know, kind of like, you know, really piggybacking off of what Andrea said, because it's not just about, oh, I see you in that space and I see you doing that thing that I may want to do. It's being able to be in communication and conversation and community with people. And just just representation alone is not enough. And so I would definitely say that I was fortunate enough to have that representation and have that role modeling, and still do. And I share that, you know, with my experience with my students every day.
So, Jerry, we know you had at least one role model because you're a second generation driver. So I think it was your father who was also a driver for the MBTA. What did you expect as a Black man when you decided to sort of stay in the family business? And is that what happened?
That wasn't the original plan. It kind of just happened. But
oh, yeah?
My dad supported us. He raised 6 kids, and so it was a good paying job for him to raise us and support for us. So that's kind of the way I went with it. So I know it was stable. It's a stable job. So
Please finish your thought, Jerry.
No, it's fine. Growing up, I just knew, like, I can take that route and, like, be successful in a way.
And how long have you been a driver?
6 years.
Has there been anyone who's sort of taken you under their wing or helped show you the ropes or made you feel supported or welcomed in the job?
Well, being a second generation driver, I kind of knew a lot of people already. So my dad kind of like prepped me, I guess, for the job. So, and also we worked in the kitchen at Charlestown Garage. So I know a lot of people from cooking up there. So I wouldn't say anyone really took me under their wing, but my dad did, I guess you can say, because he pretty much told me how everything was going to go. And I kind of knew from firsthand just being around the job.
So I'll ask the three of you, and any of you should feel welcome to answer. We're going through a huge racial reckoning in the country now. We tend to mark it with the Minneapolis police killing George Floyd last summer, but obviously we have been in a struggle for centuries. In this last year, as our country has developed a collective awareness of our systemic racism, has anything in your work gotten either easier or harder that you would want to talk about? Monique, maybe you could start if there's anything there for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'll start by saying, you know, I've been teaching going on 10, 11 years now. I started teaching directly out of college at about 23 years old. And what I would understand as the young me, right? Like before the last 10, 11 years, I would say teachers don't talk about race until something happens. And I only talk about, you know, race issues or things that are tough and challenging if I'm studying them. And that was my understanding. And then somewhere along the line, and I can't really place it, but somewhere along the line, even with my Black teachers, and I, you know, I can say this with a lot of confidence because I have reflected and I've, you know, kept in touch with a lot of my educators. I also got this message from my Black educators as well, where it's like, you talk about this, you know, this meaning race, if it's in relation to what you're already administering and sharing with your young people, but you don't really go out of your way to make it a thing. And I had that message prior to my teaching. And I say that to say I completely flipped the switch probably about 7 years ago, because it did take a couple of years for me, in all honesty, even though I work in a school that, you know, we service young people who are primarily of color and identify mostly about 40-45% of my student population identifies as Latinx students, with another large portion identifying as African-American, and then smaller portions identifying as Asian, white, and other. And I say this because it took me a while to even feel like it was okay to share myself authentically as an adult educator. I didn't feel that I could share, you know, conversations and books that were focused on race pretty easily, unless I could point to a standard that I was hitting, or unless I got approval from, you know, someone who was, you know, observing me, that I could read or do this thing. And that felt really, really disheartening. And this happened more than once. And then there was this switch where it was, now you need to talk about it. And so I say that to say that it has been really, really damaging, especially as a woman of color, as a Black woman and an educator, to kind of always be on the side of not really about truth telling, because like I mentioned before, I consider what I do creating the space so we can, myself and my students can engage in meaningful dialogue. But it really has been disheartening to just kind of, you know, be in that mind space of, I want to provide a space for my students to engage with real world things. And then having at one point being told that it's not important enough because we don't think that's what they need to know. And now there's a shift of, this is what we need to talk about all the time. And there seems to be a lot of and more pressure to not do it authentically. And that's what I have a problem with. And so, you know, it's been very pleasant, I will say, in the midst of all that. But I am a little bit wary that what the messaging is that if you don't engage in this, then you're not doing what quote unquote needs to be done. Because I do believe, just like we, you know, we tell our students, like, show up as who you are, and you cannot force, you know, people to have conversations that they're not ready to have. And that includes adults, just like it includes young people. And so I just wanted to just share that as both a challenge and both a pleasant experience that I have been able to be in more dialogue and community spaces with my colleagues and my young students around race. But Yeah.
So I'm sorry to cut you off. It's just I want to make sure we've got time to hear a little bit from Andrea and Jerry on this. We've got about a minute left. Andrea, anything that's become easier or harder?
Well, definitely harder, in personally and professionally. You know, our at Youth Connect, our proximity to the police department, you know, as social workers who work inside BPD, definitely just made our hearts even heavier. You know, we are working with young people who are encountering the police every day, and then to watch the murder of George Floyd and to have kind of help staff personally and professionally kind of try to make sense of something that does not make sense and shouldn't make sense just adds to the weight of just already being a social worker and working with the young people we work with at Youth Connect. And then personally, you know, I have an 11-year-old daughter, and so we are having conversations, and to see part of her spirit, I feel like, not shine as brightly is just hard as a parent to sit there and watch it. Hearing Monique talk as a teacher in the Boston Public Schools makes me a little bit more hopeful and hoping that my child gets to have conversations in safe spaces like that, like Monique is creating, gives me a little bit of hope. But it's definitely been a hard year.
I'm sorry. Jerry, any last thought from you?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of tension. I would say when these events have occurred with operators, like whether you're white, black, or whatever, and you can just tell like things are different now. Like there's definitely a lot more tension in the lobbies. Like if something's on the news, whether people are agreeing or disagreeing, it's just very different now. Like if people speak up more, and they might not like what you say, but I feel like these conversations need to be held.
Well, I appreciate the three of you joining us for the conversation today. Jerry Cohen, Andrea Perry, Monique Symes. Thank you to all three of you. It was generous.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.